I invite you to Matthew 5. You will recognize it as part of the Sermon on the Mount. Following up on the Beatitudes that we shared last Sunday, the blessed are those who are persecuted, blessed are those who live in sorrow, for they shall be comforted. Following right up on that, Jesus begins to teach. If you're following the lectionary along, and by the way, I did jump back onto the lectionary. I've been off of it for a few months, and I hope you will understand that sometimes the routines of that just get one in a rut. And so we've been doing a lot of other things, seasonably appropriate, but we've been off the lectionary, and we're back on it now. And if you'd like to know more about that, I'll try to put something on our website about the lectionary. You can certainly go online these days and look at the lectionary scriptures each week, and it's really a handy thing to do. So each week there is a gospel lesson, there is an Old Testament lesson, there is an epistle lesson from the letters in the New Testament, and there is a psalm. So four readings each week, and that can be a little overwhelming, especially if you try to consider all of them and try to find some way to focus or blend them together. That sometimes works great and sometimes it doesn't work at all. But today we're going to focus on Matthew. Matthew 5, beginning with verse 13. Jesus is teaching the crowds. Now this is right after the Sermon on the Mount. So Jesus and the crowd are on the hillside and Jesus is teaching them and they are listening to him. You are the salt of the earth, he says. But if salt loses its saltiness, how will it become salty again? It is good for nothing except to be thrown away and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world, he said. A city on the top of a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a basket. Instead, they put it on the top of the lampstand. And it shines on all who are in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before people so that they can see the good things that you do and praise your Father who is in heaven. Don't even begin to think that I have come to do away with the law and the prophets. I haven't come to do away with them, but to fulfill them. I say to you very seriously that as long as heaven and earth exist, neither the smallest letter nor even the smallest stroke of a pen will be erased from the law until everything there becomes a reality. Therefore, whoever ignores one of the least of these commands and teaches others to do the same will be called the lowest in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps these commands and teaches people to keep them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. I say to you that unless your righteousness is greater than the righteousness of the legal experts and the Pharisees, then you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. This, brothers and sisters, is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. We had a little fun this week with our sermon preview video about punching holes in the darkness. But I invite you to take that seriously. If you didn't see it, go back and look. It's on our Facebook page. It's on mine. And we're trying to do those each week to whet people's appetite and to begin to plant some seeds, to sow some seeds and see if they grow before Sunday. I hope you'll catch up on that and get interested in that. Have one of your grandkids show you how to do that. Or maybe you do it. I know some of you do. We talked about punching holes in the darkness. We remembered how in the old days before electric lights, sometimes people used to gather in the streets and watch the evening lighting of the lamps about dusk time. And sometimes, even before electricity, a lamplighter would come along there and light candles in storefront windows and light the oil lamps on the top of poles in some downtown community. And the little girl with her daddy that were walking the streets that one dusky evening, and little girl said to her dad, "Look, Daddy, that man is punching holes in the darkness." That's a great image for what it should mean to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. There is plenty of darkness in our world, and there is plenty of need. And if we can just punch holes in it, we can't fix it all, but we can let a little light through. We have to have our own hearts right with God. We pray the psalm that we have for today. "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious ways. Point out anything in me that offends you, and lead me along the path of everlasting life." If we have our hearts right and ready, then we can maybe point the way, break through with some light for another. "You are the light of the world," Jesus says. Family and I went on a vacation years ago, a pretty big one. We were headed to California on the road, of course. Our first stop, Lubbock. And we had packed the car with tents and sleeping bags, and we planned to spend a few nights in the Motel 6 type places and a few nights in campgrounds. And so the first night out, we were in a campground. We got into the Lubbock KOA campground a little after dark. We just bought a brand new tent before we left home. We set it up one time in the front yard just to make sure we could figure out how and had all the pieces. That was kind of an interesting deal because the only flat spot that was big enough was right out by the road. And here we are on a Sunday afternoon setting up a tent in our front yard right out by the road. And people began to drive by and kind of look like, "What are these people doing?" It was like, "Don't worry, we're just practicing." But we pulled into that first night campground in Lubbock, and we got our tent set up in the dark. Couldn't tell much about our surroundings, but we set up the tent, and we got everything in it, and we bedded down for the night, expecting to get up early and get on the road the next morning. Well, about 2:30 in the morning, a train whistled so loud that you would have sworn that it was going to come right through our tent. And we all woke up in a panic and were scared and wondering. And finally, it went on by and the noise of the whistle faded into the distance, and the noise of the wheels on the track kept rumbling for a while. And finally, they too faded away, and we drifted back to sleep. About 5:30, the same thing happened again. Another train coming through. We had, I don't think we ever got back to sleep that time. But Lubbock was a story that any of us will remember, our daughters especially. We called it the Lubbock Railroad KOA campground because it was so close to the railroad tracks. There was a little barbed wire fence between us and the tracks, but when we got up the next morning, we could see that, but we didn't figure that was much protection. And it certainly was no protection from the noise. If it would have helped us if we could have set up the tent in the light, you know, before the sun went down, maybe. We could have gotten a little more familiar with our surroundings rather than being radically awakened in the middle of the night. We might have even chosen a different spot. You know how it is, especially when you're in a new place and you wake up disoriented, trying to remember where you are, and you have your kids with you and your wife, and you feel like you're responsible for all of them. I think that train conductor got some joy probably out of waiting until he was right beside that campground to blast the steam horn. Thomas, the train would have been blown off the track by that whistle. The light of day would have helped us to make a better choice about where to set up camp. Seeing the surroundings would have at least given us a familiarity with the surroundings, at least enough to be confident that the train was beside the campground and not running through it. So it would have helped us to have light. And that is true in every decision that we make. It's no wonder that God is called light so much in the Scriptures. Jesus himself is called light. He says in one place, I am the light of the world. And then in another place, he says, you are the light of the world. The reality is it's Christ shining in us that make us bright. 1 John 1:5 says, and this is the message we have heard from him and announced to you, that God is light and in God there is no darkness at all. What a comfort it is that light dispels darkness. In the presence of light, there can be no darkness. And in the presence of darkness, even the smallest light of a single candle can light a room. You are the light of the world, Jesus says. Poke some holes in the darkness. One of my high school and college days friends was Les Barnett. He was a photographer, and he taught me everything he knew. No, not everything. Much of what he knew about photography. I was off on a trip to Canada one summer with a traveling music group, and Les gave me a camera to take along, 35mm Pentax. It was a wonderful camera. And he taught me quite a bit about how to use it. He sent me on that trip. We decided to split a roll of Ektachrome film. It's a 100-foot roll that he knew how to load into canisters. Remember the little 35mm film canisters? And so he did that in a dark room and loaded 40 canisters. And he gave me 20 and he kept 20. And he said, now you shoot all you want to this summer and send them home and I'll process them for you. And so I shot 21 rolls of film that summer before I saw any of my pictures. And I was supposed to be learning how to use my camera. So fortunately, they turned out great. And Les gave me a gift, not just the camera, but an interest in photography and a passion to preserve events by taking pictures. I still live with that. We just carry our cameras around in our pockets these days, and they're better than the old ones. But the darkroom story that I wanted to share with you is how dark it gets in a dark room where you're working on processing film or making prints. It is dark. Now, in a black and white lab where you're processing black and white film or making black and white pictures, you can use a red lamp, a small red glowing lamp, and that gives you, once your eyes adjust to it, that gives you a fair amount of light that doesn't expose the film and the paper. We don't do this kind of photography anymore, but it's still an art form. And so we were in the dark room together, and that little bit of light takes forever to get adjusted to, but once you do, you can see what you're doing. But when we were loading film canisters with color film, you can't use any light, because even the red light would foul the film. And so in that room, there was no light at all. If you've ever been in a room that is absolutely not lighted in any way, you know how dark that really is, how puzzlingly dark. You keep waiting for your eyes to adjust, and they don't, because there is no light in the room. That's the kind of light that we live in. When we say God is the light of the world, or Jesus is the light of the world, it makes a difference to understand it that way, because we may think our light's pretty small, and I know mine is sometimes, and yours is probably too. But in a world that's as dark and needy as ours is, that one little bit of light can make a huge difference. Jesus said, "You are the light of the world." We worship him because he's the light of the world, but he turned that on us and said, "You have that responsibility too. You be reflectors of that light." Job 34 says, "There is no darkness or deep shadow where workers of iniquity may hide themselves. It's no wonder that they called evil the dark side of the force in the movies. Because people do try to hide behind darkness, but they fail because they cannot. Psalm 19:2 says, "Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night reveals knowledge." Knowledge of the light and our human need for light. It's dark when your eyes never adjust to the light. It's hard to even take a step in that kind of darkness because the ground seems to be right up in front of your face. And you figure that if you stumble and fall, it will be. And you just don't feel comfortable with that. Your feet don't seem to be confident. We spent some time one summer at McDonald Observatory down in Fort Davis, Texas. Some of you have been there. They have in that county and the surrounding areas a bunch of laws that control light pollution because they don't want any lights shining up into the sky. City lights, street lights, they don't want bright things that are shining up or even reflecting up. They have very, very stringent applications of light pollution because they want the sky to be as dark as possible so that you can see the light. If you haven't been there, I suggest you go to a star party and see that place, the trillions of stars that you can see from there when it is that dark. When we orient ourselves to looking up to the heavens, in a place like that, we can see things we've never seen before. And we can understand what real darkness is and what it means to have a light. And why it is that we so often refer to Jesus as the light of the world or to God as light in whom is no darkness. Daniel 2:22 says, "It is God who reveals profound and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells in him." Psalm 139 says, "I can never escape from your spirit, O God. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to heaven, you are there. If I go down to the grave, you are there. If I ride the wings of the morning, if I dwell in the farthest of oceans, even there your hand will guide me and your strength will support me. I could ask the darkness to hide me and the light around me to become night. But even in darkness, I cannot hide from you, O God. To you, the night shines as bright as the day. Darkness and light are the same to you." We worship a God who is light and who created light and who calls us to be reflectors of that light. It's one of the very first things God created. Let there be light. Remember from Genesis? Let there be light. And Jesus' birth, centuries later, was announced at nighttime with skies so bright with stars that the shepherds were sore afraid. Haven't quite figured out what sore afraid means, but it was profound. God's light illuminating the darkness. Like our Christmas Eve service showed so beautifully, we are supposed to grow that light by spreading it, by sharing it. All of the darkness in the universe cannot overcome the light of one single candle. As you consider coming to communion today, please know that all are welcome. Children especially, because of the grace that God has shown to us in Jesus Christ, not because of anything that we have done or avoided doing. It's not because of who you are or the disappointments that you have experienced or the darkness that you have found. It's not even because of the good things that you have done. It's because of Jesus, God's pride and joy, whose light, like a city set on a hillside, cannot be hidden. Jesus is the one who calls us to let our light shine before others that they may see our good works and glorify God in heaven. Think of it this way. If you're a student of science or of physics, maybe, I think this will make sense. Darkness cannot change light. But light does change darkness. It must. Come into the influence of Jesus, the light of the world. Come into His glow and let it light your pathway, and then let your light so shine before others that they may see your good works and give glory to God in heaven. You are the light of the world, Jesus says.